Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
The word addiction, either it's a thin line because people want to say, well, this is an addiction, this is not. I want to say that whatever you're doing behaviorally that's causing pain to you and your family, call it whatever you want. Yeah. You need to stop. And you probably need help to stop. Because if you could stop on your own,
you would do it.
You would do it.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about your journey from pastor to sex therapist.
Yeah. Well, I've been pastoring for about 27 years, and most of that pretty ineffectively. because I just I didn't understand the real struggles that a lot of people were dealing with. Just kind of as a pastor, you kind of hear surface level stuff.
Yeah.
But then when I started really discipling men in small groups and meeting with couples and doing marriage counseling and that kind of thing, I began to see these same patterns. And they were around abusing sex or misunderstanding of sex or sexual intimacy disorders or things like that. Mm-hmm. And so I would ask these couples, you know, I'd see them, how can I pray for you? And they'd go, well, I just pray for my marriage.
Right.
And I'd say things like, okay, how do you want me to pray for your marriage?
Right.
Well, we're just having problems, you know. And I'd go, okay, well, what kind of problems? Well, you know, well, come to find out, the dude, you know, is sleeping with prostitutes.
Well.
I mean, that's a problem, right?
Yeah, that's a problem.
But, of course, they wouldn't come out with that. You know, you kind of had to dig around for it. But what I found was, is
why do you think they didn't come out with that right away?
Well, I mean, shame is, you know, an issue for all of us. I mean, all of us have some moment in life where we look back and wish it would just, we could hit a delete button, you know.
Yeah.
The problem is when that becomes like a cyclical behavior, that it wasn't just in the past, it's now in the present.
Mm-hmm.
And then our fear is, you know, it's in the future.
Right.
And we know it's cost us, but we don't know how much it's cost, will cost us. There's a training program out of Arizona called International Institute for Trauma and Addiction Professionals.
Mm-hmm.
And they offer a certification as a sexual addiction therapist. So I signed up, and 2 years, four modules, hours and hours of supervision with probably the best sex addiction therapist in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
Sat with him for hours and hours.
Yeah.
And then just started telling people what I do, and the doors flung open.
Yeah.
Everybody's got a brother or a brother-in-law that needs to talk.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of how I got into it, just feeling very ill-equipped to help people as a pastor.
Okay, so you go through all this training,
mm.
and you come out on the other side, and then you finally land your dream job, a guest on the Most High Show.
I'm pretty much ready to go to heaven now.
That's it.
Yeah.
You're done. all right, so I have some questions. I've asked some friends to ask me some questions. And one of the questions is, how much of sex therapy is really about sex?
Hmm. Great question. Sex is a coping mechanism, usually to other issues. And so the organization that, what really enlightened me when I went through the training mm-hmm. was that trauma is a real catalyst for sex addiction. So anytime you find addiction, you typically find tied to that some kind of trauma. So what really has to happen is kind of go back to that trauma, or try to, and just kind of deal with that and then have an understanding of what it is about that issue or those issues in our life that causes us to think that sex is going to cure that.
Right.
And so it's like the alcoholic would say, you know, I've had a terrible day, I've had a stressful day, and so I need a drink.
Yeah.
A sex addict would say, I've had a terrible day, I've had a stressful day, I need to look at porn and masturbate.
Yeah.
Or I need to go to a strip club, or I need to call a prostitute.
Yeah.
And it's just basically a coping mechanism.
Right.
You know, for the chemical addict, there's all kinds of chemicals that are looked to. For the process addict, it could be gambling. It could be gaming. Mm-hmm. It could be love addiction. It could be workaholism. But you can also throw sexual addiction in that in it as well.
So what you say process addiction, what's I know that for drugs, there's chemical addiction, and there's an actual brain chemistry that gets changed, mm-hmm. right? Over a period of time after using the drug, your brain chemistry actually changes and becomes, your body becomes biologically dependent on the drug, right? And your psychology, your mind becomes dependent on the drug.
Yeah.
Is that the same when it comes to these process addictions?
Some would argue it is, and some would argue it isn't.
Okay.
The reality is that in the amygdala of the brain, which is where all the adrenal glands and all the dopamine and all the chemicals that we love to feel, the feel-good sensors of our brain, God right. gave them to us. I mean, God wired our brains, right?
Yeah.
And what chemicals do is they short-circuit the natural connection to those releases of dopamine.
Mm-hmm.
And epinephrine and all those types of things. They feel really good when the brain releases them. The chemicals short-circuit that.
Okay, yeah.
And so there's been a lot of studies done. One of the guys, he's not a Christian, but I like to read all of his stuff, is Dan Siegel. He's a mm-hmm. psychiatrist out of L.A., but he talks about mindfulness a lot.
Yeah.
And he is very interesting on all the, you know, the neurological wirings and things that are happening in your brain,
mm-hmm.
Especially around the amygdala. In the brain, it's kind of weird. The brain, he does this thing. The brain's shaped like this, right?
Yeah.
And then we always see this, you know, it looks like spaghetti, you know, the brain. We think that. Yeah. But if you were to open that up, what you'd see is the amygdala system, and this is where all the chemicals
are popped out.
You know, so let's say that you have a 15-year-old daughter who has her first boyfriend. And she has these ooey gooey feelings, this love. That's a relief. That's literally happening in the amygdala.
Wow.
Chemicals being released, and so we can become addicted to that feeling of love, or feelings of sex, or drugs, or that feeling of acceptance, like you were talking about with, you know, the likes on Facebook and things like that.
Now you said that you deal with more on the process addiction side, and so tell me where do you think that kind of splits from a chemical addiction to process addiction?
I the road does fork in the addiction world. You have chemical and process. Chemical addiction, we all understand that's alcohol, drugs, you know. Process addiction is any process that we look to meet our need, reduce our anxiety, to deal with our stress.
Okay.
And again, those are sexual addiction primarily, gaming addiction, which now there are treatment centers all around the world for that.
Mm-hmm.
Workaholism, love addiction. I even have guys I work with who struggle with gambling addiction.
Yeah.
And so what Bill W. did with AA and in the 12 steps, all the other fields are using the same tactic for recovery, and it's working.
Yeah.
And so there's literally a Gamblers Anonymous.
Yeah.
There's Sex Anonymous.
Yeah.
There's, and so... I don't work in the chemical side. I work in the process side. So if I meet somebody and they say, "What do you do?" If I just don't really want to talk, I just tell them I'm a pastor, and they don't ask any more questions. They go, "Ooh, like," and then. But if I tell them I do process addiction therapy, they usually don't want to ask. And so but it allows me to maybe expose them for the first time to this concept and what this world is about. But I also like to help people understand the neurobiology of relationships.
Okay.
What I mean by that is, what is it that's happening in our brains, in our minds, around relationship to my wife or relationship to another woman?
Mm.
And so the reason that a lot of men will sexualize other women and never have sex with them.
Yeah.
But they're in a committed relationship.
Right.
They would actually rather not do that. They just thought from a young boy seeing their dad check out women.
Yeah,
that's all that. That's what a man does. What I like to do is try to help people understand why you do that, so that you can stop it.
Yeah.
Because Jesus said it.
Right? Yeah. The
Sermon on the Mount.
Yeah.
In the Bible, there's really not a lot of scriptures around sex addiction or.
Right.
You know, there's some. You could go pick a few, but regardless of that, I always like to go to what Jesus said.
Yeah.
I think he. If there's any scriptures that are confusing, if Jesus is clear on it, that's what you stand on.
Yeah, well, which verse are you talking about? Are you talking about if you lust in your heart and your mind, then you've done that. basically.
Yeah, what he's saying is don't commit adultery. In other words, be sexually faithful to your wife, okay? And then he goes on to say, to take it a step farther, that if you lust in your heart after another woman, you've already committed adultery.
Right.
Now, that usually indicts most all men.
Right. Yeah.
Because, you know, we have, the culture has taught us that women are objects to be conquered, to be possessed.
Yeah.
Well, he takes this concept to the extreme. Mm-hmm. Like the, if your right hand wants to steal, you know, cut it off. I mean.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's, we don't actually see him following through with that with people, but that's an, but what he's saying is this is so important that whatever the measure is you have to take, take it.
Yeah.
It's is that what you were thinking?
Well, yeah, and then the fact that when I got out of rehab and got clean for the second time.
Praise the Lord.
You know, and I went back to the work corporate environment and entertainment industry. And I started having relationships with female coworkers or people that I kind of would work with, and they were not, there was the kind of sexualizing of them had kind of, even the subconscious sexualizing of them, I started like going, whoa, this is new. Mm-hmm. Like I'm actually enjoying this relationship. You're like a sister, and you know.
You're human. Yeah.
You're a human. You're another person.
Yeah.
And that was huge, but that's at 33 years old.
So yeah.
There's a lot of years in between there.
Sure.
Where I know, it's subconsciously, you know, there's that little train of thought that's going back there, that even though we're having this conversation about the hooplas and whatnots, you know, there's still this like underlining thing going on. Mm-hmm. And I didn't so much acknowledge it out of guilt. I more acknowledged it out of the possibility of a healthy relationship mm-hmm. with a female other than my wife.
Yeah.
And it's amazing.
Yeah, it's what God meant.
Yeah.
And so you take, you start becoming, like you said, you were 33 or something, but that's okay because you start becoming self-aware. Why do I do the things I do? Why do I respond the way I respond? Help me figure this out, Lord.
Yeah.
And the more self-aware you become, the less likely you are to repeat problematic behavior.
Right.
And so when you talk about the neurobiology of relationships, you can even talk about the neurobiology of addiction. You know, what mm-hmm. is happening in my brain that makes me think that I have to, because whether you have sex with another person or you have sex with yourself,
right.
because you're looking at an image on a screen, there's a world of fantasy there.
Yeah.
It's not real.
Right.
And so much addiction is driven by fantasy.
Right. I went in and did some extensive research with some of my non-Christian friends, meaning I had one conversation with one of my friends. And
was he awake?
And okay. And he's like, you know, hey, if I'm not hurting anybody, then what's the problem with my sexual behavior? Mm-hmm. If I'm having consensual sex, I'm on Tinder and I'm making connections and we're having consensual sex and we're the other person's into it, I'm into it, I'm not married, then what's wrong with that, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think the thought is, well, there's a moral issue, and it doesn't, it sounds like what you're saying is the person that's maybe doing that, that there's probably something inside of them that's causing them to kind of sleep around. But what's wrong with sleeping around? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, one of the comments he said if there's two humans, if there was only two humans on the earth, they would end up having sex.
Mm-hmm.
So what's wrong with it? Other than the, and I know this might be a hard place because as Christians, we have this, I guess, instructions on how to live morally. And it makes sense to me now. It's really hard to explain to somebody else mm-hmm. without sounding like, you know, I'm morally superior.
Yeah, it
because
is.
I'm not morally superior.
Imagine if you had a reverend in front of your name. It'd really cripple you.
Gosh. Right. So how do you, I mean, well, the reason why you're here is because sitting down with you, we've had lunch, we've hung out, and you're real. I mean, you're down to earth, you're real, you're the salt of the earth. And that's what we need. We need more men of God like you who are willing to say, I'm gonna get in the trenches with you. I'm not gonna look at you crazy. I'm not gonna take this moral high ground on you. I'm gonna help you through it. Mm-hmm. So when you're talking about all these issues and you're talking about the process, some people are gonna say, well, that's my process. If it's not hurting anybody, then what's wrong with it?
Mm-hmm. Well, he really makes a really good point. And instead of talking in hypotheticals or philosophical, I'd rather talk in real life what really happens. And in my world, I don't tell people, you shouldn't do this, bad you. You're not married, yeah, and you're single, and you're out there having right. sex with other single people, bad person. I've never told anybody that.
Right.
I deal with people who have experienced so much pain from it
yeah.
that I'm on the other end of that, helping them kind of recover their life, be reconciled to God, yeah. understand that if Jesus was the only man, and we believe this, that ever perfected living, mm-hmm. why would I not follow his teachings
right.
versus my own philosophical slant on things?
Yeah.
So I'm just going to assume that if one man perfected living,
yeah.
he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah.
And what he said was, he gives us, the 10 values in the Sermon on the Mount that we should live our life by. I think I'm going to spend the rest of my life trying to live out those values. Some of them effectively, some of them ineffectively, but that's my goal, that's my pursuit. But I deal with so many people, Christian, who have been burned by sex, have yeah. been, sex has, the abuse of sex has destroyed their family, has, one of the places that, the best place for a sex addiction therapist to market?
Well, the church?
No, no, because everybody's acting like it doesn't happen in the church.
Right.
Gynecologist office, OBGYN.
Really?
Yeah.
You got your face in some
Isn't that
gynecology
interesting?
Office?
Put your card. Well, because what happens is she has this rash. Mm. And either she realizes I got this because I've been acting out sexually, or I've only been faithful to my husband.
Ooh.
What is this all about? Mm. And this 15-year secret life he was living.
Cheater's nightmare.
Exactly. And yeah. so it's interesting that now that couple, there's no philosophical conversation happening with this couple.
Yes.
There's only pain. There's anger, there's rage, there's disappointment, there's fear, there's all these things. So I really don't even have time to talk to the single guy who wants to have sex with other single girls
yeah.
about the moral high ground of that.
Right.
Because I'm too busy doing triage with people who've felt the pain of sex. So Jesus right. really did know what he was talking about.
Yeah. Well, it's the first step, right? Is acknowledging that something's wrong. So if you're out right. there sleeping around and you don't think anything's wrong with it, well, then there's no recovery going to happen.
Right, but you will. And I've talked to yeah. too many 50-year-olds, 60-year-olds, 70-year-old people that regretted those decisions.
Yeah.
Because what happened was even in your heart, it begins to calcify when you see other people as your objects, or you exist to please me.
Yeah.
And the selfishness that begins to be entangled with that. Mm-hmm. And the heart, you can't... you can't control the other person's heart, feeling, and emotions for you. And so when you have the most intimate act that that two human beings can have,
yeah,
and then you rip away from that to go have another one, that's what happens at the zoo, okay? That's not what's meant to happen in
for
human
humans.
Life.
Yeah.
And so, every culture has its different moral standards. Every society's had its different moral standards, but we continue to come back to this this issue of a committed relationship, of faithfulness.
Yeah.
I don't meet people at the end of life that regret a committed relationship of faithfulness. Matter yeah. of fact, it becomes their most treasured possession.
Yeah.
I do meet people in their later in life who deeply regret these one night stands.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah, so let's say this. So we're two guys talking,
yep.
We're sitting at Taco Mac or wherever, and we're having a beer, and we're talking. And we start talking about, sex. there's never really any conversation around how dependent we are upon it. Okay. So the question then would be, well, does a man need sex once a day, once a week, once a month, once a year? What's the dependency we have upon it? Is five times in your life plenty? You know, every man is literally going to be at a different spectrum. Every woman is at a different spectrum. And so when I'm working with couples, it's very interesting to ask the question to premarital couples. So what do you think a sexy health life is going to look like? And let's talk about frequency once you're married. They have not had this conversation before. But what happens is in a man's life, he begins to think that he needs sex more than he actually does. And so there's this thing that I can administer called a SDI 4.0. It's a sexual dependency inventory. And it asks a series of questions and gives us a report on where each man is on the spectrum of sexual dependency. So for instance, if you score in this quadrant, you know, you're just a red-blooded male who, you love sex, you need it, but you're not going to rape women for it, you're not going to pay money for it, you're not going to abuse it, but it's a great part of your life. It's a wonderful thing. God created it, right? But then there's some people who would score over here, and they have this perception in their mind that I need sex bad. I mean, I'm not a nice person if I don't have it regularly, or I'll abuse it in some way. I may even hurt someone else to get it. But then you get into the far spectrum of that, which is where the sex addict is, and oftentimes even beyond that is the sex offender. I don't work with sex offenders. If you've been convicted of a crime around sex, there's other people for that. I don't do it. But the sex addict is one who says, I'll risk my job, I'll risk my health, I'll risk my marriage to get sex. And sex with my wife, if I'm married, is not enough. I need the variety of that. And so the question then becomes is, where do you lie on that spectrum? Well, the inventory I can administer shows you, pinpoint, by the way you answer the question, it's very thorough.
This is not an online survey.
It's something that I administer that you take on the computer.
But you're
but you
taking
can't
these
find
results.
It without... You need a therapist to administer it to
you. So if you're going online and you're Googling, am I a sex addict, and you take some freaking survey...
It's minimal. It's and then there's no follow-up to it. And so what I find is guys who've... But the men that I'm working with rarely ever come to me because they woke up and had this idea. They've been busted. They've been caught. They've been put on 90-day suspension at work. Their wife's threatened to leave. And they need answers. And so this is where I usually find them. So guess what? So the majority of folks that I work with are on the farther spectrum of that. Then I rarely have somebody who scores hardly anything. Because they don't, I just don't see people. It's just not a curiosity thing. It's usually there's a point of pain. And they need some answers to it. And so, but this concept is a great question to ask men, is what's your dependency upon sex? You know, what could you survive just being faithful to your wife? Or if you're a single man, could you survive being a virgin until you're married? Is it possible?
I don't know. That's a great question to ask.
And all you're doing is, again, you're not judging anything. You're just trying to figure out, because I believe that most men are in different places with that question. But it really begins to speak to talking them back from this really problematic behavior of maybe it's in your mind that you need to risk everything for sex. You know, I sit with, you know, my wife and I'll go out with other couples and things like that and all, but I tend to... Because I used to see this in myself. I would check women out. I mean, objectify women, you know, if they had a beautiful body or they were pretty or, you know, whatever. I would find myself trying to get a double take, you know. I wanted to see more of that. And I would say cute things like, you know, God really knew what he was doing that day. But, you know, so, but it was wrong, period. And so I see other men do the same thing. And sometimes it's so subconscious that when I ask them about it, they don't even remember it. Some guys go, I know. But what I've had to wrestle through and try to help other guys wrestle through is, why do we do that? What is the need there? You know, if God created it and said live in it in healthy standards, he didn't it wasn't a cruel joke, mm-hmm. you know, to have healthy yeah. boundaries around your sexual life. So,
yeah. Well, I think my counselor even said something about that a married couple, it's not until you're 10 plus years into your relationship that the sex has actually becomes really like all that it can be. When I got out of rehab, my counselor said, you lie in bed naked and pray and have sex. And I said, man, that's crazy doing that. But what he's really saying is I can have unshameful sex with my wife. Sex with my wife, there's no shame. I've abused sex so much in my life and been abused by sex that even when I'm having a healthy version of it, there's still this little thing in the back of my head, this is wrong. Shouldn't be doing this. Because my first exposure to sex was unhealthy. It was incorrect. And then that just ballooned into a lot of pain, right? And so to now be able to experience that without shame, you know, I'm not praying before sex yet. But I, you know, as crazy as that sounds,
praying for it.
Yeah, but as crazy as that sounds, that's really the place. That's how intimate it is.
Yeah,
and to be that close to somebody, you don't get that with especially porn, and you don't get that with prostitution, and you don't get that with one night stands. Mm-mm. And it's like this next level of sexual intimacy that it's pretty friggin' amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, I highly recommend it if you're married to work on that. I mean, to learn your wife's body and to study that and to there's so much there.
Absolutely.
So when people look and they go, okay, this biblical definition of marriage or a biblical kind of version of sex life is prude or it's not. This is like God designed it to be beautiful, and it is beautiful.
Absolutely.
If we kind of just get out of our own way and allow that to be, right?
Well, yeah, I like to say, you know, what does the other side of obedience look like? And if you are obedient to all the things that the Lord has prescribed to us around sex, what does it look like to the man who has been obedient in those ways?
Yeah.
Well, talk to that man. It's awesome.
Yeah.
The deception is what the enemy comes in and says, oh, no, you need variety. Oh, no, you need danger. You need,
right.
And he sets us up with tripwires to destroy us.
Yeah.
Because I'm telling you, I see the end result of all those other escapades, and they usually don't work out well, but... The thing about in the context of a committed relationship, a marriage, your wife is not the exact person you married, nor are you.
Right.
We change.
Yeah.
We evolve. We grow. Mm-hmm. And so to think that, well, I'm just having sex with the same person for 35, 40 years, no, you're not. They're growing, they're changing, they're evolving, they're experiencing new things.
Yeah.
And so you constantly, you know, Steve Perry was right, I get the joy of rediscovering you.
Yeah.
Remember the Journey song?
No.
Okay, well. and you're from California, Jesus.
Yeah, I know.
But that's what I try
to
do.
If you'd have quoted Ice-T, I would have got it. All right, so earlier you said that 25% of sex addicts are female.
Mm-hmm. Roughly.
Roughly.
A fourth, yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think, as a guy, I don't, you know, I guess it depends on when you would have talked to me. I would have been like, oh, show me where they're at. but I wouldn't think that. You just don't think that's
right.
True.
Right.
And we've had a lot of talk, and I think a lot of what we've talked about applies to both men and women, but we've really focused on men because we're dudes. So, you know. But what about with women and women who have, are in these same kind of cycles? And maybe you hear about the side chick, right?
Right.
And there's women out there like, don't be a side chick. It's, you know, there's no value in that, this and that. But a lot of women maybe choose that, or they feel like that's their only option.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And so what would you say to a woman in that kind of situation?
I would say you are too valuable to be somebody's plan B. Mm-hmm. You're a daughter of God. You do not need to be some guy who travels in from out of state, his toy, because he's probably not going to leave his wife and his family for you. And as hard as that is to hear, that's the fantasy that a lot of women who are affair partners of married men have. Sexual addiction is about a fourth of female. All sex addicts, about a fourth of them are female. But a lot of that is really more of a love addiction than a sexual addiction. Let me explain that. Love addiction, and there's pretty good books out there on this as well. Stephanie Carnes does a great job writing on this. But love addiction is that I need to be in love. I need to be in a relationship. Single is bad. And so I have to have somebody, even if it's somebody who's already committed to someone else. And that's a delusion that in somehow I've got something. But love addiction is the desire for that feeling. And again, remember back in the brain where we talked about when you're in love, there's just these ooey-gooey feelings and all this stuff. Right. That's legitimate brain chemicals being released that make you feel good. The problem is that it's not really love.
Right.
Because in many cases, affair partners are already committed to someone else. They'll say things that make you think it's love. And so in a lot of women, the desire for companionship is just tied to sex. So because they feel like, well, I can't have an affair with this person unless I have sex with this person. Mm. And then that's where things get really messed up, in my opinion, because they're now tying sex with love. But it's not that, it's just sex.
Right.
Most of the time when a couple says they want to come see me and they've been married a certain amount of time, I know there's been an affair. What's happened in the last 5 years is it's usually the wife who's been unfaithful. I know that sounds stereotypical. I'm just telling you my scenario. But about 65 or 75% of the times I meet with a couple who've experienced adultery, the wife has been unfaithful. It's fascinating. And I think it's because the men are so preoccupied with their jobs and with their, you know, they just don't tend home well enough. And so women need those feelings of love. And so what I'll see are wives who fall in and out of love with their husbands, or wives that women that'll fall in and out of love with other people, even if they're married to someone else. It's not the sex that they're addicted to or that they're needing so much. It's the companionship. It's the feeling wanted. It's the love that they think is there. But let me tell you, if a man is married and has a family in another state or another town or another neighborhood, and you're meeting up to have sex, you're his plan B or possibly even plan C.
Right. Well, if you're an out-of-towner, you're...
Because in a lot of scenarios...
You're on the list.
Right. And in a lot of scenarios that I deal with, and it is tragic, is when a man has a wife, has a family, and the affair partner thinks they're the only affair partner.
Mm.
But guess what? The wife doesn't know. The affair partner knows about the wife, but the wife doesn't know about the affair partner. But the affair partner doesn't know about the other affair partners because he's that good.
Yeah.
Until it blows up. Right. And statistically, if they do leave their wife for an affair partner, there's like a 18% chance that that marriage will make it.
Right.
It almost never makes it.
Right. It just starts on a false kind of...
Right. So Shirley Glatt, the best resource I have for couples that have experienced affairs or even the lover in an affair... In other words, a couple's married and you're the outside person, you need to read this book called Not Just Friends by Shirley Glass. Mm-hmm. It's not a Christian book. She's actually recently deceased, but she did like 48 years of therapy, specifically with women and men, about affairs. And what is it that happened? What's the dynamic that's happening there? And what she says is in there is if you have to qualify someone that is just a friend, the word just already just indicted you. Because let's say that you and your wife, you got this marriage, and there's this one person she's aware of, and she doesn't feel comfortable about it. As a good husband, you would listen to your wife's intuition.
Yeah.
You wouldn't argue with her and say, we're just friends.
Yeah.
You just incriminated yourself, right? And so,
a lot of guys have just stopped the video right now at this point.
Yeah,
deleted probably. It from their internet history.
Oh crap! Yeah, he got his own hidden cameras. But yeah, I think that us as humans, we're so. You remember Robert Palmer's song, Might As Well Face It, You're Addicted to Love?
Yeah, yeah.
It was kind of an 80s rock. Remember the supermodels in the background? Yeah. That's a real addiction.
Yeah.
He was right. It's a love addiction. Mm. And the woman feels like she has to pay the price for sex to get that love.
Yeah.
And she may enjoy the sex. She probably does enjoy the sex. But it's fleeting. It's temporary. It's just a moment. And it's really tragic to see someone settle to be someone's plan B.
Yeah.
When the reality is that they never really will be their plan A.
Yeah.
The delusion is they'll be plan A.
Right.
But that's a long shot.
Yeah.
It's a long shot.
Well, I thank you for coming in and talking about sex. Is a very complicated thing. There's a lot of areas of sex that we didn't even talk about.
Sex is good.
Sex is good.
I want number one, I want it to be known that sex is not bad.
Right.
Yeah. Sex abuse is bad.
Yeah. Yeah,
but sex in and of itself in a committed relationship is a good thing.
Yeah, it is. But it's complicated, and so hopefully what we've done here and what we've said here will shine light in somebody's life, and they'll maybe move towards finding somebody. And I know you have a website. We're going to put that up of how people can connect to you. If you're not in the Georgia area, there's plenty of places to, I guess, use your Googles. You can find something.
Yeah, ask the Googles. They'll tell you.
Yeah.
But I also do, I'll do some online with guys to just at least answer some questions they have or just help them forward.
Yeah.
It may not be full-blown, counseling and therapy, but it can help them take a next step. And what I find is most guys just need to know what the next step is.
Yeah, cool.
You don't need to know 50 steps ahead. You just need to figure out what's the next step for me. And the next step for most men is to talk to somebody.
Yeah, just get it out.
Just get it out.